Hello and welcome to the Back to Movement podcast. I'm your host, Bernadette. This show features everything you need to know about back pain, fitness, wellness, and movement science. It is evidence-based, bringing you the latest scientific research along with expert tips. My mission here is to help you achieve a healthy back, leading you to a life full of vitality with freedom of movement. Can what we eat affect chronic low back pain? Do we need to avoid certain foods? And can food cause inflammation in the body? Today, we are going to explore these questions and more with a very special guest. It is an absolute honor to introduce you to Annette Lindquist. Annette is a naturopathic nutritionist therapist, stress consultant, meditation and yoga teacher based in Sweden. She specializes in holistic approaches to nutrition and wellness, and she's here to share with us how what we eat can affect our bodies. Please help me welcome Annette Lindquist to the Back to Movement podcast. Annette, tell us a little bit about yourself. Why did you become a naturopathic nutritionist therapist?
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. Well, I think I've always had a massive interest in health and specifically how we can heal our bodies naturally. And I've kind of had that interest since a young adult, just going to school, going to college, trying things out in a more natural way, trying to keep health. Just something that I've had with me, something that's brewed a long time. And then many years ago, I had a burnout and that kind of prompted me to studying because I was looking for different ways of healing. And mm-hmm. I just felt like I needed help because I had a tough time. And then it wasn't very helpful going to the doctors. So I started my studies as a naturopathic nutritionist therapist. Yeah, it's a mouthful.
So burnout, what do you mean burnout? What did you experience?
I experienced a lot of fatigue. It was really hard to get out of bed. I had anxiety. I developed rosacea at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I had this rosacea coming out
on the skin.
On the skin in my whole face. I think you don't experience burnout when it's just one thing. There was many things going on in my life. Mm-hmm. So, I had small children, my mum was ill, my job was changed, our house got burgled and I got married. So it was all of these different things happening in life. And I think it was just too much. And I think the human body is fantastic because we're wired to be able to, handle a lot of different things. But if you don't listen to the body's knocks, knock, knock, it's always telling us stuff, it's always telling us things, knocking. And if we just completely ignore that and just, continue to do what we normally do and think that that's going to be okay. And I think, I didn't listen. So, yeah.
It's very interesting. You said that a burnout and what you experienced. I mentioned I'm in the middle of a move now. We are going back to the United States and we now live in Hungary. And I usually have low back pain if I have too many things going on. But now my low back pain is perfect. My body is strong.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a cold sore. I had to put a makeup on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up yesterday with it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I need in the middle of the move and a day before a podcast with you. So anyway, my body was telling me, too many things going on. As I said, my low back is fine. My body is fine, physically, because normally I usually have low back pain, but now I have a cold sore, but it's okay.
Yeah, that's a little knock.
Exactly, a little knock. That's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your path. Why did you become a nutritionist?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how does gut health influence inflammation in the body?
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's get down to it.
Exactly.
Inflammation And the immune system, it's all, you know, we have the immune system in our guts. We have about 75 to 80% of our immune system in our guts. So yes, it's going to, you know, depending on what we eat, it's going to be influencing, you know, our immune system and how our immune system deals with inflammation. So if we get if we injure our knee quickly, you know, we're going to see the inflammation directly, and you know, we can see how the body attends to it and works with it. But I think many of us, we walk about with low grade inflammation. It could be anything. It could be, you know, that you brush your teeth and you're bleeding a little bit. So, and that's kind of like, yeah, you can see it, but you may not think about it. You may just think about your teeth, but. When it comes to the gut, we have microbiome in our guts. So it's all these microbes. We have bacteria. We have, you know, we have a garden of things in our guts. So let me just explain it in a way that makes it, you know, for someone who doesn't know about bacteria, think about it as a garden. You know, we have a full garden, and there's loads of different plants and flowers and all of that. Now, if we don't attend to our garden, we all know it's going to be lots of weed. You know, there's going to be tons of things that we don't necessarily want there. So if we don't attend to our garden, these weeds, you know, will overgrow. And it's the same with your gut, literally. You'll have, for most people, you have like microbes that's not supposed to be there. They will change where they are supposed to stay. You know, they can migrate to different places. And I think when they are our immune system, because they communicate also with our brain and they communicate with the rest of our body. So first of all, we need to tend to this garden and have a good variety of, you know, microbiome, we call it. So if we don't have that, we are going to be prone more to illness, perhaps, or disease, or we might get rosacea, you know, something like that. So I think attending to your gut, and when we do that, if you eat specific foods that will, you know, make your garden flourish, and if you eat other foods, you know, your weeds will take over. And I also call it, you know, they're a little bit like our soldiers, our microbiome. Some of these flowers are soldiers because, you know, they shoot down all the things that, you know, not all, but most things that we don't need also in the body. So together with our hydrochloric acid and that we have in our stomach. But yeah, they help, you know, to attend to our garden, to make sure that we don't have too much of things we shouldn't have. So when we have or eat certain foods, they can either, you know, thinking of inflammation as a fire, they can either add to the fire or they can reduce the fire. I think, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so inflammation and the gut are very, very tightly joined. And also, you know, they do communicate the microbiome with the rest of the body. So it's important.
It's very interesting you mentioned, you know, when you injure your knee, you can actually see the inflammation. It's correct. But when we talk about an injury, first step, we have an inflammation, but that's part of the healing. Is that the case with the inflammation in the microbiome? You know, because when we have, for example, you know, you injured your knee, and the first step, you know, you have an inflammation because that actually is part of the healing.
Yes.
Is that the case with that, or that's not the case?
Yeah, so we need inflammation. We wouldn't survive without inflammation. That's our, you know, that's what we need. And if we didn't have it, we would die, literally. So we need inflammation. It's just when the inflammation is, you know, chronic, when it kind of stays the whole time. So you injured your knee, and after a while, you can see, hopefully, it gets better.
Exactly.
But if you have chronic inflammation, and we can talk about that as well, what is chronic inflammation? How do you get it? But that's also very connected to your gut. You can have, in our intestine, we have, obviously, you know, all these microbes, but also thinking about the permeability of the intestine. So thinking about, you know, we have all our food are going through our little hole. And if the permeability the tight junctions in our mm-hmm. intestine, if they are, you know, not together enough, if they start to, you know, move, then, mm-hmm. then, you know, small little particles that the eye cannot see can get into the bloodstream, and then mm-hmm. there will be an immune response. Like, for instance, I can't have wheat, too much wheat, mm-hmm. and I can't have too much milk. I am not celiac, but I can't have too much of it because I've had leaky gut. And leaky mm-hmm. gut is something that we talk about in functional medicine, but we may not always talk about it in normal healthcare. But we can talk mm-hmm. about permeability of, you know, the intestine. So it's that as well. If you have, if your gut is not like super tight, your tight junctions are mm-hmm. not tight enough, then it could lead to that, you know, things come different toxins can get out into the bloodstream. And they're so minute, you know, your eye can't see it, of course. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and so I think when you have that, that's going to be like inflammation, you know, that's going to be, that's not going to be inflammation, but it's going to help the inflammation, you know, to grow. And if I can, it's always easier if you have an example, but because of my, for instance, rosacea, mm-hmm. that has to do with a gut, I'm pretty sure. There's two different, you know, science in this, two different ways of looking at rosacea, but I'm just going to do it as an example because I've treated it as if it was an autoimmune thing, and some people say it is and some people say it isn't. So but let's just say that so literally I was eating a lot of wheat, I was having a lot of dairy, and I then took a little test to check, you know, am I allergic? I wasn't allergic, mm-hmm. but I was intolerant, which meant that when I took away my wheat, I had 60% of my rosacea went. And then when I took away the milk products, you know, the rest of it went. And sometimes I get flare-ups if I eat something, too much of something. I have a little bit of dairy, but not too much. But that's just me. And I'm not saying that's everyone, but that's mm-hmm. how inflammation can show up. So, and intolerances can show up. So yeah, there's a lot of things we normally don't talk about that can happen when it comes to inflammation. So that would be, I would call that a low grade inflammation because you can't see mm-hmm. it, you know. And for other people, yes. it will show up differently.
So you mentioned wheat and dairy. So those are inflammatory foods, right? Is it inflammatory food for everyone, or can some people have it? How does it work?
Yes. So
that a myth? Are there any inflammatory foods, or is it just a myth? You know,
it's very hard because I think most of the wheat we have today is not like the wheat we had yesterday. Like most of our, like 50 years ago, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's different soil in our, you know, when we grow our crops and our foods. And we can look at that, but that's a different discussion. But I think some people can tolerate wheat well and some people can't. Mm-hmm. And also I think this also becomes very specific to the individual and not just to everyone. But I would say if you have a high processed, high processed food intake, then yes, that's probably going to be prone to inflammation because, you know, if you have a lot of white bread, that's processed food. It's not really great for your gut. It doesn't do much, literally. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you can't have it. I'm just saying that wheat used to have a lot of minerals and it doesn't have the same minerals today as it used to. So yeah, it really depends. But I think if you keep wheat down, it's probably going to be quite good for you.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if we now touching base on wheat, how about sourdough bread? Because that's also wheat.
Yes.
Is that good? Is it bad? Because now we live in, you know, oh, sourdough bread. Everyone is into sourdough bread. It's good for you. It's healthy for you. Is that true?
Well, I think, you know, because it's sourdough, I think it's definitely better. Yes. So it's been fermented. So I think mm-hmm. definitely... I can have more of sourdough than I could have of a plain white sandwich as having an intolerance. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can definitely tolerate that more. But then again, you know, coming back to not only, you know, sourdough is probably a lot better, but then it's still, if it's just plain white, it's still, you know, it's not going to, release blood, a lot of sugar in your blood. So your blood sugar is going to go up. Yeah, and that's a different story. Maybe I can just explain that when every time we eat something, there is a response, there's an insulin response. So insulin is released because we can't walk around with too much sugar in our body, because that's just how the body works. And so when we eat something refined, you know, it's going to release quickly, you know, blood sugar is going to go up, so glucose. But if we add protein, or if we add, you know, something more like, it's different if you have a rye bread or if you have a white bread, you know, you have fiber in it. So when fiber, a little bit of fat and a little bit protein, maybe, you know, that's going to help your blood sugar, you know, the release then is going to be a little bit more even, which means you're not going to have a spike in blood sugar. Because when your blood sugar spikes a lot, that can really add on to the fire of inflammation. So if we eat refined foods all the time and we spike our blood sugar all the time, that's not a great thing. So we want to look at keeping an even, you know, an even blood sugar.
What's refined food?
Okay, so refined foods would be your sugars, you know, white sugar, even brown sugar, obviously, but, you know, sugar in general. So that would be sweets, it would be cakes, it would be all of that. It would be white bread, white rice, white pasta, you know, all of when you've taken away the fiber from the actual crop, that's when you kind of, taken away what helps, you know, how we should eat it. You know, back in the day, we wouldn't take away the fiber like we do today. If we're looking, you know, many, many years back, you would keep the fiber. And it's like eating fruit. There's a huge debate about fruit. I'm actually a fan of fruit, because I think we need to get our vitamins and from somewhere, you know. But there's a huge thing going on where we shouldn't eat fruit. And, you know, there's different camps and, you know, there's different layers to how we can eat. But I always think, well, if we can pick it from the trees, then that's a good thing, right? You know, it was God given. That's how I think about it. But yes, if you do then peel your apple without the actual fiber, that's going to spike your blood sugar too. So of course there's going to be, you know, something in, you know, when it comes to those things. So
and how much do we need to eat of those inflammatory foods to have a problem? Or, you know, like, can we eat it every once in a while? How does it work, or how should we do it?
Yeah, I think that's so individually, it's to the individual, like, how does it work for each and every one of us? One, it's gonna, you know, depends how your microbiome is, first of all. Secondly, it's also going to be, what's your normal baseline? So what do you normally eat? You know, do you normally have a pizza, Coca-Cola, KFC, you know, McDonald's diet? Of course, you know, if you have that all the time, that's probably gonna, you know, work havoc with your microbiome. So yeah, and it's not gonna give you much of any, you know, minerals and vitamins. So, but if you eat a whole, you know, whole foods, you cook your foods yourself, you know, I like to think about the 80-20 percentage way of eating. You know, 80% most of the time I eat well, 20% of the time, I can, you know, I can go for that chocolate bar, or I can have a nice glass of wine or what have you. But it's all about the balance, isn't it? It's all about the balance.
Yes.
So I think, you know, I'd never say, I don't believe in never eating anything again, because I don't think as humans it's easy for us. You know, I've met a lot of patients, you know, working for a functional medicine clinic, and it's only about one patient a year that goes, oh, Annette, I really want it, you know, it's black and white, I really want it like this, like that. Most people, it's a big thing to change the diet. It's nothing that you do just overnight. And I think it's just, it's important to to make sure that we can keep up with a good diet, and it could be a lifestyle rather than just a thing for a couple of weeks, you know. And especially if you have chronic pain, then, you know, I really truly believe that you can help that chronic pain and inflammation by eating well. But it's never only about the foods.
Yeah,
I think it's really important to look at lifestyle, and do we have people to talk to, and what's our stress levels like, and yeah, all of that, because that it's not just ever one thing, it's the balance with all these things. I
feel like we are talking about chronic low back pain, because this is, as we know, it's multifactorial, so mm-hmm. I guess inflammation is multifactorial also, so it's not just food, there are many things, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you can just go to stress, for instance. Mm-hmm. So you may not think about stress being something that's going to suppress the immune system, but it will. And it will do something to your digestive tract and your gut as well. Because imagine that, you know, back in the day, now I'm talking like years back, we might be walking in the woods, or we're on the savannah, there's a lion or there's a bear. And we have a decision to make. Are we going to fight that bear? Or are we going to run away from it? Or will we just lay down and then just play dead? What will we do? So say we're running away from the bear or the lion, right? Maybe with a lion, we don't have much of a chance. Maybe it's easier with a bear, I don't know. But we're running anyway. So when we're running and, you know, we are producing, because we're scared, aren't we? And, you know, we're stressed. So we produce cortisol and adrenaline. So those two are like stress hormones. Yeah, they help us cope with stress. So when we're running away from the lion, you know, blood goes to the hands and feet. And so we can run, our senses becomes, you know, wide as we can listen and hear, you know, we're running away. So the body's not really going, let's think about, you know, going to the loo right now or whatever. And I think many people who experience stress, they may either experience constipation or they might experience diarrhea. It could be either way, you know, and, you know, for some, of course, there's not going to be any experience at all. It's going to be normal. But what happens then is that the body's not concentrating on digestion. So it's not concentrating on your gut, which then it's not concentrating on the immune system. So it kind of, because you're doing something else. So you're running away from the bear, and the body's really clever, because the body always gives you tools from, okay, this is where I'm now and this is where I'll be at later. So the body's always helping. It's just not always us understanding how it's helping. So indirect, when we're stressed, it's not going to be a good thing for our digestive system. And many times I see in clinical practice is that what happens when you have stress, your hydrochloric acid, your stomach acid that's supposed to kill pathogens and things toxins that we shouldn't get into our digestive system, then it becomes weaker. So which then means that we let things through. So that's also, you know, can compromise the microbiome that way. So yeah, it's the whole thing, I think.
Very interesting. So we have inflammatory foods. Are there any foods that can help with inflammation?
Absolutely. So I think if you keep a good baseline of your diet, you know, if you get your greens, your vegetables and some fruits, and I think with that, think about the rainbow of colors, you get antioxidants. Right. So antioxidants are really good. So what's the difference between an oxidant and antioxidant? You know, just to explain, if you eat an apple and you stick it on the counter, it's going to go a little bit brown after a while, isn't it? So that's oxidation of the apple. Now, we oxidize every day. You know, we eat things, we breathe, we have waters that may not always be clean. We inhale some perfumes, we do all these things that's going to, you know, oxidate. And then when we eat an antioxidant, you know, just to make it simple, I like to make things simple, it's a bit like, okay, we'll clean the apple now, then it's clean, you know. So we have antioxidants, they're good for the body. And of course, there's going to be, there's tons of research with antioxidants out there. And, you know, there'll be different schools and there'll be different thoughts on antioxidants. But from my school of learning as a naturopathic nutritionist, we want antioxidants in our body. So, you know, that will help with health. And then, you know, if you look at anti-inflammatory foods, we can look at garlic, we can look at ginger. Has a compound in ginger is anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. Turmeric, the compound mm-hmm. curcumin, that's anti-inflammatory. And we can look at fish, right? So omega-3 fatty acids, for instance, that's found in fish or fish oil or algae, really good for inflammation. So there's tons of things you can do mm-hmm. and eat that would keep a good diet and helping with inflammation. And I think if we know what can cause inflammation and we know what can be good, you know, for inflammation, then we can have a good mix, you know. And I never think it's about just one thing. You know, it's not like I can have McDonald's and eat turmeric and think that I'm going to be all right. You know, it's just the whole thing, I think, that we look at. Definitely. Yeah. So the whole intake.
It's very interesting because a couple of weeks ago, my client had her birthday weekend and she ate food that she usually doesn't eat those food, you know, those kind of foods, like inflammatory food, you know, cake, they went out. And Monday we had a session. She has chronic low back pain, but it got better so much, you know. But on that Monday, we started working out and she told me she is in so much pain. She doesn't feel good. She's constipated and her low back flared up. You know, she was in so much pain. So do you think that food can actually affect, you know, that chronic low back pain? Do you think it's maybe something to do with the pain tolerance rather than affecting that area specifically, obviously, but rather than reducing our pain level when we eat too much of these inflammatory foods? What do you think?
Well, I think it's all to do with the baseline, coming back to the baseline again. Now, if you already have inflammation, then obviously if you eat something that, you know, and might be just for her, you know, that those certain foods will trigger something in her and they may not trigger you or someone else and so forth, or me. But I think it adds to the fire, you know, coming back to the fire, I think it adds to the fire. Definitely. And I find many of my patients, you know, I don't know so much about your client, but, you know, some of my patients, they may have had leaky guts, that they're dealing with leaky guts. And if it's not, you know, if it's not all the way there yet, so, you know, you have that it's fixed, so to speak, then of course, whatever you eat is gonna be a little bit, not whatever, but if you eat certain foods, then it's got to get worse, I think. So I think it's very individual how we react to food. And also, you know, coming back to, there's not one size fits all. You know, we can talk about great stuff today and then someone can come and say, well, you know, I can't have garlic. It makes me sick. Well, then you probably shouldn't have garlic at all, just because it could be acting as an anti-inflammatory. So I think we have to look at it individually all the time. Yeah.
Very interesting. Can stress and mental health affect how diet influences chronic pain?
Yes. So we talked a little bit about the stress and I think mental health, you know, we're looking a lot about mental health these days. And can't talk to it too much, but, you know, we're talking about inflamed brain, you know, we're talking about having an inflamed brain. And so we're eating foods today that we normally wouldn't eat and that we shouldn't be eating. You know, if you look at something, you pick something up and if you can't understand what's, you know, inside that food, you know, you pick up an apple, you know, it's going to be an apple. But if you pick something up in the supermarket and you just look at it and there's all these different you know, numbers and the different names and you've never heard of them, then that's probably not a real food. So just talk to this first and then I'm going to get back to the mental health. But if it's not a food, when it gets into your body, you can also look at it like this. We get a nutrient from a vegetable, right? And look at that as a key. I'm making it quite simple now. And there, obviously, health can be really complex. But say we have an apple again, and that's your key, and you have the lock inside your body. So you're going to be able to turn the lock around with your key. Now, if you have a food that is supposed to be an apple, but it's made in a lab, and then you stick it into the lock, yeah, the key will fit. You probably can't turn it around. So it's all those things, I think, that we have to look at. So with mental health and our gut, for instance, we have something called the gut-brain axis. So it's our gut communicating with our brain, you know, and sometimes that communication, you know, if we have and it doesn't have to be a bad diet because it can be so much stress, you know. And as we talked about before, you have so much stress that's gonna, you know, affect your gut, and then that connection here will also be affected. So yeah, it's really important to make that to know that that's something that also is needed to attend to when it comes to mental health and looking after your brain and looking after your body, and in a way that's going to suit you and not maybe always what your neighbors or your neighbor do, or they did that, but it may not help. So I think it's all got to do with moving inside the body, maybe sometimes closing your eyes and just go, okay, what do I actually need? Because there's so much buzzing around, I think. So I think you have to feel our bodies too, I reckon. You know, we can't just, if we're just running and you know, you might have brain fog and for that, you know, or whatever it may be, and you're just running in life and you're feeling stressed, and when you feel stressed, you'd rather go for something sugary because your brain needs glucose, right? Yeah. So you go for that chocolate bar or, oh, I just stop at McDonald's, and you'll have that McDonald's because you don't really have time to, you know, prepare your foods at home. So if you can then just, you know, move back and just have a couple of minutes to yourself a day and just go, what do I actually need? And I think that's going to help brain health and gut health too, to just, yep, you know, come down. Did that answer your question? I'm sorry.
Absolutely. you mentioned a chocolate bar. I have to be honest with you, every evening, and that's my treat, I have a little piece of chocolate. That's my treat. Yeah. Every evening, that's my thing. And it's not the healthiest chocolate, and it's not a big piece. It's a small piece. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Yeah.
If we have a little bit, is that okay, you know, in moderation daily, or should we just stop eating those kind of food?
Well, I think about foods as coming back to the 80-20 principle. You know, if you have a small piece of chocolate every night, and it's not going to be a massive chocolate cake, it's just going to be a small piece, and you eat well the rest of the time, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference. No.
But thank you so much. Yeah. Oh, now, a big relief. We can stop the podcast. That's what I was interested in, because that's my thing. You know, I work out, eat healthy, trying to be mentally healthy too. But I just need two little squares. Well, then I hit the couch and I just relax for 30 minutes before I go to sleep.
I think that's absolutely fine. Okay. And I also think, you know, when it comes to food, you know, when I started on my food journey as a naturopath or a naturopathic nutritionist, you know, you try tons of things, and I'll make like little green juices. I'm thinking this is going to be great. And I drank them and I was like, this is the most, you know, I didn't like them, yeah, so to speak. And I also think when we eat something and we don't like it, what's that telling the body? It's telling the body, oh, I don't want it. If you, you know, you hold your nose and you drink it, mm-hmm, it's, yeah, I don't think that's a good thing. And yes, of course, there could be nutrients that we need, but we could probably find those nutrients somewhere else, so to speak. And I think also when we enjoy something, yeah, and of course the chocolate, you know, that's so little. I think go ahead, have your two pieces of chocolate. That's absolutely fine. And you look so healthy. You look so lovely. Your skin's so nice. So I think you're absolutely fine. But I'm just, you know, I'm just thinking even there are research where you have people eating in solitude, you know, they eat on them. On their own at night, especially, you know, older people, people don't have many, a big social life. So they eat on their own each night and they eat a really good diet. It's perfect, you know, if there is such thing. And then you have someone who eats with their friends or their family. And it's not as perfect diet as one could, you know, could think you could have. And they, you know, they sit and they laugh and they're having a good time. Yeah, so they are a lot healthier, the people who are, you know, has got a little bit of a social thing going on. And I think, you know, it's not always easy for us. And I think also that, you know, we could see that throughout the pandemic, you know, so many people sat on their own. And obviously that was going to affect inflammation. That's going to affect mental health. That's going to affect how you feel. So I think, yeah, it's all about, I think it's all about a happy balance, you know. I like to talk about the tree. You know, you have the, you know, they have the tree, the base of the tree, and then you have the branches. So if you keep to the base of the tree most of the time, and then, you know, in my Swenglish, I'll go, you'll flip out having, you know, a chocolate bar, a glass of wine here and then. It doesn't really have that effect. Now, maybe there's certain foods, you know, for instance, for someone who is intolerant or has a, you know, a leaky gut and they have wheat, which say someone's intolerant to wheat. Now, just having a small amount of wheat can really affect how your gut, you know, and affect inflammation, just this tiny bit, you know. But when it comes to, if we're talking broader, you know, because it's hard to just talk, you know, there's so many different scenarios that people, you know, people can, why they have inflammation and how they, it can be affected. But if we talk about it as a wide thing, I think, you know, yeah, again, 80-20, you know.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I think. And how does exercising play an important role in reducing inflammation?
So when we exercise and use our muscles, that, you know, that's kind of that's supporting the immune system. So, you know, all sorts of exercise can be really good. But if you're really stressed, you should look at how you exercise, for instance, right? So if you're running away from the bear and you're eating really well, but you're running away from the bear every day or the lion, and then you go, okay, so literally in real life, you go out running or you train for a triathlon or an Ironman or you're just going for a run, that's going to raise your cortisol levels. So remember, the cortisol is our stress hormone. So if you're already stressed about work, life situation, you know, something, and then you go out and do a really tough workout, you're going to raise cortisol levels, and that's going to add on to the stress hormones that are circulating in your blood. So, and that can actually lead to anxiety and the feeling of anxiety and so forth. So, yeah, I think it's so important to move. Movement is part of us human beings, and we sit down a lot, don't we? You know, it's easier to, you know, most people today, not most people, but many people have seated jobs, you know, you sit for 8 hours, literally, and then you go home and then you watch the telly and you sit a little bit more. So I think we're made to move. We are totally made to move. Yeah. And so exercise will play a huge role in our immune system and inflammation. It just depends where you are in your, in your stress baseline. And too much exercise, say you're out running, you know, I don't know, a mile, 10, not, Swedish miles 10K. So say you're running 10K every day. That's obviously going to stress the body. So it's, I think, again, when it comes to exercise, I think it's good to exercise every day. You know, but I think you have to look at where you are in your life. If you're 25 years old and, you know, you're happy-go-lucky, there's nothing going on, then absolutely fine. But that exercise may look different if you're a 50, 55-year-old woman and you're in menopause. You probably shouldn't go out running every day, because then you maybe concentrate on different things, because your stress hormones and your sex hormones, you know, they kind of, I wouldn't say they're similar because they're not, but they, you know, they need the same nutrients and they, you know, they react quite similar in the body. So, yeah.
I also believe that if someone is running 10K every day, it's not a problem if they've been doing that for a while and their body adapted to it, because we can adapt to things. But if you are just hitting menopause, you never ran before, you can start, but doing gradually. Yeah. I always believe in that the body can adapt. We are amazing. The human body is amazing. You can adapt to so many things, but you need to start gradually and slowly. First of all, because you can have an injury, right? So if you've never been squatting and you start squatting with 50 kilograms, you're probably going to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
But if you start squatting with your own body weight first, or even some of my clients, they come to me, they can't even stand up from a chair. So we start, you know, squatting like half squats or holding onto something. But if you start gradually, you can do probably anything, even in your 60s, 70s. You just need to start doing it gradually, especially if you've never done it before, right?
Totally agree. And I'm sure you've seen those people who run a marathon when they're like in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s. That's amazing. So no, of course, yeah, totally, totally. I totally agree.
Yeah, but it is a problem if you never exercised before and you start something, you know, you're jumping in, you're diving in too fast. And that's when usually things happen.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think, you know, like we said, we're made to move. So we have to move our bodies. It's in where I went to school and how we talked about, you know, health, we had like physical, you know, that like movement and so forth. And then you have the mental part. And then you have the food, but you also have the soul part, you know, nourishing your inner you, you know, somehow. And for different people, that will mean different things. But you just attend to you. So, yeah, so the balance again.
Yes. So can you recommend meal or a dietary planning for people who are listening? You know, what should they do? How should they start?
Oh, I think, you know, look up the Mediterranean diet. I think, you know, you can go for, you can kind of adjust that a little bit. So the Mediterranean diet is how the people ate around the Mediterranean Sea. And there's so many, and how they eat today as well, but it's changed a little bit. But I think, you know, what grows there and how people eat, they have a lot of olive oil, for instance, can be, you know, anti-inflammatory. There's a lot of fruits and vegetables. There's not so much red meat, you know, it's a bit like more fish. And, you know, you have greens, and then you also have, you know, they eat with other people. They sit and they eat and they have this social thing. So I think if you look at that diet, that's a good way to start. There's so many scientific studies about the Mediterranean diet, and there's tons of diets out there, you know. And, you know, you can go for all different things, but I always tend to come back to the Mediterranean diet because it gives you so many different things and inputs. If you go, you know, people might say, oh, I want to go a carnivore diet and only eat meat. Well, how, that's probably fine for a while, but after a while, I'm going to say, well, how can you attend to your garden? How does meat doesn't give you, it doesn't help for the garden to grow, because different things in kale or broccoli or, you know, all these different vegetables and fibers, they feed our microbiome, right? Mm-hmm. So and meat don't tend to feed as much as these different mm-hmm. fibers do. So I would look at the Mediterranean diet, but I will also look like how can you tend to your garden then? So maybe something like sauerkraut, something that's been fermented, or mm-hmm. kimchi, or, you know, miso soup. All of these fermented mm-hmm. foods are really good for your garden. You know, it will mm-hmm. make your microbiome flowers grow and expand. So that's what you probably want to add into your life. And if you do get something like sauerkraut, for instance, which is, you know, it's cabbage, isn't it? It's kale. Go for the ones in the fridge in the supermarket, unless you do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't go for the ones out in the shops, because they've been heated. Mm-hmm. So all the good bacteria that's in the fermented mm-hmm. food will be gone. So adding some of that into your life. And I think, you know, I like to talk about the plate. If you want to make it a little bit visual, you have a plate. And if you turn that plate into a clock, right? So you have 12 mm-hmm. o'clock on the top, 6 o'clock at the bottom. So between 12 and 6, that's your vegetables. So that could mm-hmm. be your broccoli, your cauliflower, your kale, you know, it could be cucumber, could be, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. But really yeah. foodie, not like just salad, because that's not going to fill you up. But, you know, something crunchy, mm-hmm. half yeah. of the plate. And then a quarter of the plate. So from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, that's when you could have, you know, your meat, you know, could be something, could be your fish, could be your chicken, turkey. Yeah. And I think too much red meat's probably not too good. So you can obviously have red meat, but the Mediterranean diet, looking at that, it doesn't hold that much red meat. But so you can have your meat, and then the rest quarter will be like, okay, so I have some, maybe you have potatoes or grains and stuff like that. And some people might say, well, you know, are potatoes really, you know, healthy? Should you be eating them? Yes, they spike your blood sugar. Yes, they do. But I also think if you eat well, and if, you know, if you have it with another meal, the rest of the meal, you're going to be fine. But, you know, you can tend to, you know, if you want whole grains, maybe like whole grain rice or something like that, or quinoa, something like that. And just keep the plate like that, and make sure that you also add some oil, like, or some fat to your diet, because some vitamins gets absorbed by fat. So if you have a completely mm-hmm. fatless diet, so to speak, then it's going to be harder. For instance, vitamin D, if you take a supplement during the winter, it can be really good for your vitamin D levels, which, you know, we need enough vitamin D that supports the immune system. So obviously yes. that will kind of support the inflammation as well. But if you buy a tablet of vitamin D and then you don't have it with food and don't have it with fat, it's going to be hard to absorb it, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I also think about this. I also want to say, which I think is really important, it's the ratio between essential fatty acids. So we touched on fish, right? So fat fish like mackerel, salmon, you know, anchovies, you know, little fish like that, they got omega-3 fats in them, and algae has got omega-3 as well. And you find omega-3 in other places. Of course, you find it in meat and you can find it in egg. But, you know, it's really, there's tons of it in these fish. So omega-3 can be really good for inflammation. We need omega-3. It's essential mm-hmm. fatty acid. So it's essential for life. Yeah, we need to get it through our food. We don't make it in the body.
Yeah.
So omega-6 is really good also. You know, we find that in nuts and seeds. We find it in different oils, oils from, you know, I call it the vegetable oils. Any oil that comes from the bottom of the land and grows up, that's normally mm-hmm. omega-6. If it's in your trees, that would probably be your olive oil, and it's omega-9. And then you have mm-hmm. you know have the fish. So why are these oils so important? Well, omega-6 is important, of course, and omega-3 is, and we want them in a ratio. In an ideal world, it would be 1-1. But that just doesn't happen most today. I haven't yet seen anyone with a 1-1 ratio in mm-hmm. clinical practice. But if you get below like a ratio between three omega-6 and one omega-3, then you're probably all right. But most people in the Western world, you know, with the diets that we have, you know, you have omega-6, 15 times omega-6 in the body, then you have omega-3. And that can really, you know, cause inflammation in the body. So you want that ratio to be... Wow. To be like, it's like the scales, you want them to be on the same line or a little bit like this. But if when it's up like that, and you have a lot more omega-6 than in your life than you have omega-3, that can add on to inflammation. But I'm not saying that omega-6 is bad for you. But where do we find omega-6 except from, you know, from nuts and seeds and these oils? Well, you know, you just go to the supermarket and you buy bread, you buy cakes, you go and buy already made foods that you know, they're stuck, or there are tons of omega-6 in those, because it's easier to put omega-6 there and it will keep the food. So without knowing, we have too much omega-6, and we might cook with omega-6 oils. So the ratio kind of, you know, it's too high for omega-6, and that's going to add on to the fire. So I think if you think about it like that, you know, and I think if you have inflammation, if you have pain, omega-3 supplements can be a really good thing to look for if you don't eat fish three times a week. And I think sometimes you need to eat fish a lot more depending on how much omega-6 you eat. Hopefully not sounding too complicated.
No, but if someone doesn't eat fish at all, they can actually substitute that with supplements, right?
Yes. So you could go for a fish oil, or you could go for an algae oil, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then you want to look for at the back of the package of the supplement, and you want to go EPA and DHA. So you want a high EPA. And what's a high EPA? It would be quite good if you could get up to 400. And then if you look at the DHA, also 400 or somewhere around there, that could really help. Okay. With inflammation. So, and also make sure that the supplement is as clean as possible. You don't want to buy a supplement from someone who hasn't tested, you know, for toxins. Because today, as you know, we're all aware of, our seas don't look the way they did 100 years ago. So our seas are full of toxins. So I think some of these fish, that's why you want the smaller fish, because they because they eat the algaes, and then the bigger fish eat plastic and mercury and all of these different things. But then they eat the small fish, and that's how they get their omega-3. So just be mindful, get into a shop that you trust and that you know. Just don't buy anything offline that you haven't got an idea where to get it from. So I think omega-3. And then, of course, you can supplement with, you know, turmeric, curcumin. You can cook with it. If you cook with it, add some pepper, because that's going to help the absorption of this compound. So, yeah, and there are you know, some research that supports that. Yeah, you can take a turmeric supplement. It's definitely really good for you. Have it with food, and also but when you cook, you absorb it. When you use it in cooking, you absorb it quite well too. And then, of course, you know, any antioxidants. So make sure that you have a variety of foods, not just like, don't eat the cabbage every day, or, you know, what have you. Just, you know, look at the rainbow colors, and maybe be curious. Oh, I've never tried this. How does this taste? And can I try that? Or, oh, I might go for this. You know, experiment with your foods, because it could be fun. Make it fun rather than, oh, I have to or I must, you know. Just find some good you can go for anti-inflammatory recipes. And that would probably then, an anti-inflammatory diet would probably most, you know, cut away too much red meat. You can have some red meat, but, you know, not too much of it. And then, you know, just concentrate on where you find vitamins and minerals, so to speak. Yeah.
So Mediterranean diet, omega-3.
Yeah.
Antioxidant.
Yeah.
Those are the things that are important.
Yes.
And everything in moderation, even moderation in moderation.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And one more thing. Bernadette, one more thing, because I think we do have to be nice to ourselves. you know, when we go on this health journey and, you know, it's like you said, oh, I have this chocolate, is it okay? What if you felt bad every time you have that piece of chocolate? How would your body react if you feel bad about that? So I think rather than, you know, yes, I ate a massive chocolate bar. Well, you ate, you know, acknowledge it. Okay, this was probably not a good idea. You might get some symptoms or what have you. But then forget about it and pick up where you went. Don't go, oh, now I had a massive chocolate bar. I might just go for another big chocolate bar. Don't do that. Rather, okay. Instead, just go, okay, well, okay, I went a little bit out of line. So I'm going to get back into alignment and I'm just going to go back to my two pieces a day or whatever, or a night or what have you. So I think be kind to yourself. And I also also just want to add in, spend a little time on your own. You know, walk in the woods, reduce stress, have a walk in the woods. There's scientific, you know, studies that supports that walking in the woods, being close to trees and nature, or even the sea is good for you. You know, if I say meditate, some people are going to go, oh my God, you know, I don't know how to do that. It doesn't have to be like, you don't have to think about it as a meditation. Count your breaths. Inhale through the nose, exhale through the nose. That's going to trigger the parasympathetic nervous system. And when we are stressed, we normally breathe through the mouth, you know, and that tells the body something different. But when we breathe through our nose, that's when we just, you know, we trigger the parasympathetic nervous system. And when the out breath is longer than the in breath, we also trigger the parasympathetic nervous system. Do some yoga, Tai Chi, Pilates, whatever, you know, do whatever suits you, because it's going to be different for everyone. But find your inner peace somewhere if you can. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Annette.
Thank you.
And thanks for everyone listening to the Back to Movement podcast with your host, Bernadette, and our very special guest, Annette Lindquist. I hope you enjoyed this episode and all the insights you learned about nutrition and how what we eat affects chronic pain. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.